Okay. Here we are. Welcome to episode 2 of Annotated 911 with your hosts, Fradit, me, and
Spoon.
Today we're talking about season 9, episode 5, right?
Dia de los Muertos, yep.
Right off the bat, I need to say Harry's bedroom is not legally allowed to be called a bedroom, according to building code.
Is it the window?
Yes, the window. There's not, it's too high. It's too high off the ground and it does not open. So it is not a mode of egress in the event of fire. So not a bedroom.
Which you would feel like somebody married to a firefighter would know, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, it's just this Athena's new place is like so, in my post about the Madney house, I pointed out that it doesn't actually work as like a actual house because it's built as a set. So when they build sets from the, like just from scratch, the like Eddie's house is based on a real house.
Right. It was, season 2, at least, it was a real house.
Yeah, season 2, it was a real house that they were just renting out or whatever. And then they built the set to be like the house. But the Madney house was never a real house. They just built it as a set. And you can always, like, I don't know, at least to me, it's always, like, obvious because, like, the view out of, like, every window is, like, a courtyard or like a wall or something so that they don't have to worry about like sight lines or whatever, like out the windows.
Making sense. Yeah.
And Athena's new place takes that to extremes. It's like all the windows are like up high above the cabinets.
There's like, you can't see out.
you can barely see out of that apartment, I'm guessing is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I think it's supposed to be like a condo or something.
Yeah. But yes, I was watching and I was just like,
not a bedroom.
DiCaprio pointing like non-viable egress. Anyway, so just to get my silly weirdness about buildings out of the way. Now we can talk about real things.
Like the voiceover. They brought back the voiceover at the beginning.
The voiceover, yes. And that's my very first note, is that Ryan always kills the voiceovers.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, like, he's the best at voiceovers. Like, his voice is so silky smooth.
He's got a nice voice, yeah. And I love them playing that over the Dia de los Muertos parade and like kind of having that moment before we go back and see what actually happened in the episode.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful.
It's so beautifully shot.
Yeah. The whole thing is gorgeous. I really liked this episode the first time around when it aired. And honestly, I think I liked it even more this time around.
I had some misgivings about certain elements of the plot, which I think we talked about at the time. But watching it again, I really liked how it played out.
Yeah. And I think as it sits in the overall series arc, I think the rest of the season made this episode better.
Yes, definitely.
As it went along, it like gelled into a cohesive whole for the season, I think. It was like a real continuation of what we talked about with the opening arc, is like this disconnection.
Yes.
Between all of the characters. There's like an A, B, and C plot, which is like,
right,
Eddie's got his thing, Buck's got his thing, and then there's a really great thing with Athena and Harry.
Yeah.
Which I loved, all of the Athena and Harry moments in this episode. I really, really loved them.
So it,
like, that to me is like a better exploration of Athena's grief than what we saw in the opening arc with like the flashbacks to her being young with like McCluskey and like all of the, like, it doesn't feel like directly relevant to the loss of Bobby in a way that like her like visibly responding to his like physical objects in her house.
Yeah, I mean, that moment when she comes in and Harry's wearing his turnouts is, it's such a gut punch.
Like, and also it's just like, him, Harry, what are you doing?
It's such, oh my God, it's such an 18-year-old kid move, right? Like, you did not think this through at all.
They've done, I usually like the writing they have for all of the like kids and younger, like younger adult characters on the show. Like, just historically, I think they generally do a really good job with that sort of thing. But yeah, I think like over this whole season, I've been very impressed with how 18 years old Harry feels.
Like, right on the cusp, you know? Yeah, like, you're not, you're an adult, but you're not quite an adult yet.
Yeah. So it's like this moment, or like later when he's like, I should get a tattoo, right? And it's like, no.
We've all been there.
So yeah, I continue loving the Harry stuff, and yeah, I really loved the stuff with him and Athena in this episode. I thought it was really poignant and moving and like very gut punchy around the loss of Bobby.
And I think it's also like, after the opening arc, we're starting to see Athena be like honest about her grief. She's angry and she's upset. But she's also talking about it. She's expressing how she feels. She's expressing her hurt, which is kind of what she wasn't able to do in the first few episodes. She's just like, I'm fine. I'm handling it. I'm undercover constantly. I'm fine.
Yes.
And now, you know, she's letting herself not be fine.
Yeah. And she was directly expressing to Hen, like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to be around people who knew him.
Yeah.
And loved him, like, but now she, you know, at the end, she, like, promised her kids that she would be more present.
And she is, yeah.
And she is. She's showing up and, like, being open in that way. And I, you know, it's great to see.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have Eddie. The Eddie arc of this whole episode, which is the main kind of the thing.
Yes, yeah. And it's really beautiful. It's just really,
it's great.
And he looked good the whole time.
He always does.
Yes, he always does. But I've noticed when it is an Eddie-sode, like, hair and makeup does seem to like go a little harder. Like, they like light him like really, they're like, how beautiful can we make this guy who's already the most beautiful man in the world? When he came out of the church, like that church clothes scene, I was just like, oh my God. He looks so good.
The choir boy thing.
Yeah. The, like, the dress clothes just fit him so well. And his hair's like looking nice.
The swoopy hair and everything. Yeah. I love that scene early in the episode when Peppa and Isabel find his rosary and prayer book on top of the fridge, and he's like so skittish about talking about it, or he's like almost embarrassed that he's kind of grappling with his faith. I don't know if grappling's the word, but
yeah,
that he's exploring his faith again because it's something that's like he's touchy about.
Yeah, and he's like, don't perceive me.
likely Eddie line.
Yeah. And, you know, and like that, it's hard for me to connect with plots about characters rediscovering or reconnecting with religion.
Yeah.
But that part I get on a visceral level. Like, I'm exploring something personal. Don't know about it. Don't. I don't want to talk about it. Yeah. Don't look at me.
Yeah, I mean, the religion. The religion is kind of something I had some misgivings about when I was first watching this episode, because I wasn't sure how it was eventually going to play out. But I really loved what they ultimately ended up doing with it, which is, you know, that he's kind of going back to church as a way to try to connect with Bobby and connect with Isabel. And then afterwards, the payoff isn't him going back to church and rediscovering religion. It's him setting up the ofrenda and kind of remembering the people he loves that he lost and reconnecting to that element of his culture, which it seems like he hadn't really done before.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed like it was pretty new to him. And it definitely seemed new to Chris.
Yeah.
And
it kind of makes sense that they did it after Isabel died, because, you know, she was a first generation immigrant, and I think she was maybe more kind of involved with that than Eddie's parents would have been when he was growing up.
Yeah, totally. Especially with his mom being white.
Right, yeah. And being the person who did all of the household home life stuff.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, I just really, I always love any scene with Peppa and Abuela is like a top tier scene as far as I'm concerned. I always love when they're around, and you know, this episode is no exception. But yeah, I did really like how it, I guess, yeah, like what you said, like how it resolved into more of a personalized, individualized experience of Eddie sort of charting this path, and try like taking what works for him and like leaving what maybe doesn't. This is also the introduction to Abigail.
Yes, yes.
Which I'm very excited about. I loved the whole Abigail arc, I thought was amazing.
Yeah, and it's so funny because, you know, she doesn't really get to act in this much. We see her biting the preacher.
Flailing
minister,
around.
Flailing and, you know, doing the exorcist thing. But I loved that they kind of took a chance on the actress, because she was so good in
that
whole arc.
She was so good. Like, far and away, one of the, like, they generally have good, like, guest actors, but she, like,
she was
really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. And so what we were saying about the resolution of Eddie's plot, something I noticed, and I think I noticed it the first time around, but it kind of stuck with me this time, was we have that kind of spat between him and Buck in the locker room when Buck wants to do the Ouija board. And Eddie's like, what the hell? No, absolutely not. You think that's what my son needs to be doing? Which, of course, first is like classic Eddie moment of filtering his own feelings and fears through Chris.
Yes.
And then we see at the resolution, like, that Chris doesn't need to be protected from every mention of death, that he doesn't need to never talk about it because it's too sad. He actually wants to kind of confront that and be there in that.
Yeah. And I really loved seeing Eddie like visibly take that on board. And
yeah.
He's just very good generally about making adjustments in his parenting style for what Chris needs.
Right.
And it's beautiful. And then of course the reconnection back to his conversation with Abuela earlier in the episode. I thought was like a beautiful little, you know, just like the hands over the heart that everybody is like doing to sort of like connect that thread through.
Right. And that, yeah, I mean, that's sort of what she says to him, is that you don't, you know, she's religious. And so, of course, she filters everything through that perspective. But it's, you don't need to be looking at a church. Maybe that's not what you're after. That's not going to be the solution for you. Need to find something that's going to work.
Yeah.
For you. And then he does at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And then, yeah, well, I guess we brought up Buck, so let's talk about Buck. Buck's plot for this episode was absolutely heartbreaking for me.
It was so sad. And they did that thing that I think they often do with Buck plots, whereas it starts out kind of silly and, oh, look at Buck, he doesn't know how to make snickerdoodles, and he's seen a ghost. He thinks his place is haunted. And it's all kind of presented as him being a little silly. And then you just get this absolute, you know, gut-wrenching resolution when they find the guy in the attic and he's just like completely undone shouting at him.
Yes, Oliver's performance. He knocked it out of the park. And so did Ryan. Ryan and Oliver both like really brought their A game for their emotionally vulnerable moments. They both cry so beautifully.
But like I like that we sort of, because we were talking earlier about the disconnection between these characters, and this is kind of both an Eddie episode and a Buck episode, that they have these kind of parallel narratives about their grief and they're trying to reconnect with Bobby's memory.
Yes.
And they kind of never intertwine. Like they have one conversation about it that goes badly and they bounce off of each other, and then we never see them reconnect in the episode.
Yes. Yes. And then, and yes. So like, yeah, taking it all the way back to what I said at the beginning about how this episode is a continuation of this disconnect between all of the characters. Athena's plot is also about grief for Bobby, and right. She is reconnecting with her kids, but she's not connected with the rest of the team.
Yeah.
So like all three plots that are about essentially the same thing, they're all just running in parallel with each other, and they're not touching ever. And, you know, the one moment we get where they do is like Buck making this gesture towards Eddie to like try and bridge that gap and try and make that connection. And then
Eddie's not in a place where he can hear it.
Yeah. Eddie rejects him in that moment. And so they continue running in parallel instead of connecting. And ultimately all of them end the episode still disconnected. And this does seem to be like a very strong thread that they're weaving through the beginning of the season that ultimately starts getting woven back together once Hen's illness is revealed. And
yes.
They have to start making adjustments there. And so I do think it is really well done. But it is also a little heartbreaking.
It's a lot heartbreaking. I remember we were both talking about it when we watched this. Like, this is so sad.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. Like, it was, you know, like Buck's... a bid for emotional connection with Eddie and Chris over their like shared grief is a little silly with the Ouija board, granted, but he is like genuinely trying to like do like, that's the other thing is like this is like the first gesture of multiple gestures this season of them sort of like drawing a line in the sand that's like demarcating Buck as outside.
As not part of that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Diaz family where he's.
Yeah. That Eddie specifically is like, you really think that's what my son needs to be doing on Halloween, which is kind of sort of a continuation of accusations he leveled at Buck a lot in season 8, which is you're being selfish. You're putting yourself somewhere you don't belong. You don't have Chris's best interests in mind.
Yes.
And I think especially in this moment, and I think in general, it's so much more about how Eddie feels and how he feels off balance, I think, still in his parenting of Chris.
Yes.
and kind of flailing to find steady ground there.
Yeah. And so like from a character perspective, I totally agree. I think you're spot on. And then I just think it's interesting from like a metatextual perspective.
Yeah.
Of they keep doing these beats in season 8 and then again in season 9 where narratively they're sort of like separated pinging these little these moments like the one at the one at the end of season 8 where Buck is in the kitchen with Peppa and he's framed as like outside the two person unit of
Eddie and
Chris.
And then we get, of course, another moment like this at the end of this season too.
Yeah. And, you know, and I would say this is another moment in this episode where they're like beating that drum again of Eddie and Chris as tight-knit family unit that Buck is sort of orbiting, but not,
that's such a good way of putting it. Right. Like he's not completely detached from it, but it's orbiting is exactly the word. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think it's interesting. It's like, you know, it's like, I'm like, what are you doing there? What are you doing there, guys? Like, what is this? What is this refrain that we're echoing over and over again? And like, why are they doing it? And so I'm interested to see what, like, if they keep it up in season 10, especially now with Theo coming on board.
Yeah, that kind of reframes the whole thing.
So. Yes. But yeah, the Buck stuff was just heartbreaking for me. And it is like a funny moment when he like goes up in the ceiling and finds the guy, you know,
and
it's very reminiscent
screaming,
of like, not to be as like Supernatural posting on Maine, but it's so reminiscent of Dean finding that cat in the,
in
the Ghost Fear episode. Like it's such a perfect, funny, like scream, like.
Yeah.
But that's finding a guy living in your attic is like.
That's really scary.
One of the worst things I can think of that like might actually happen in real life. Like it's so, and it,
that's,
you know,
so
and
scary. Like, yeah.
And he's been like trying to like find a home for himself and then just to have such like a intimate violation.
Yeah.
But then, and the ending of that plot is just so Buck, where at first he's really mad and upset and is like going to press charges. And then he's cleaning up the attic and finds the sobriety chip and goes and like drops the charges and like instead like shuffles the guy off to a meeting.
And
it's just so beautiful. I just love Buck so much. And now it's so interesting to have this episode ender.
Right, in light of
what comes later in the season.
Right.
With his own struggles. It's, which I don't think they had that episode in the back half planned when they did this. Like, I think it was just...
It's a narrative beat that makes sense for him.
Yeah, just a happy coincidence. Though. Speaking of narrative beats that they could have revisited in the back half of the season, this episode is where they reveal that Eddie knows how to hotwire cars.
Come on, it was right there.
It was right there. And that, you know, and then Mother's Boy comes along and like...
And he buys it.
And
no,
he
steal the car.
Apparently, like, I'm so glad they cut that scene because I would prefer to believe that Eddie hotwired
stole
that car.
It. Yes. In my heart, that's what happened. We don't see it, so.
But yeah, it was right there. Like, earlier in the season, you say this guy knows how to hotwire cars, and here we have a car old enough to hotwire, first of all. But apparently, he, like, haggled a guy, and I'm like, no.
No,
he stole, that car.
And then drove it back to L.A.
Yeah. It's just so much, it's so much more pleasing for me to think that he hotwired that car. Also, I love then subsequently picturing them, like both of them getting in the car to go back to LA and like Eddie having to hotwire it. And like,
Buck's like, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. It's such a better moment to me.
Right.
Although, you know, Eddie spending vast quantities of money on stuff that he doesn't have to spend is also
an amusing
character beat, I suppose. So I'll take it, I guess. But it was like right there. It was sitting right there.
I love that. I love that scene with Isabel and Peppa also, because it gives such a clear picture of like what Eddie's childhood and adolescence was, because we know that he kind of had this very repressive and controlling household situation. But then there's his grandmother talking about him stealing cars, like it's just so endearing. And so you know that he was like spoiled rotten by her.
Yes.
In contrast to what was going on at home.
Yes. And that's, I love that that has always been the energy that,
yes, absolutely,
she has brought to the role, and that the writers have brought to the character. But like, even all the way back in season two, she, like, in the scene after Shannon's funeral, when, like, you know, one side of the family is basically ganging up on him, Isabel and Peppa are both like on Eddie's side.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, putting her hands on his shoulders and like embracing him. And like, she's just always very like touchy and protective of him in this very loving and accepting way. And it's always been so beautiful that he's got these two women in his life that are so accepting and supportive and loving of him in the way that people who are in like guiding parental roles in your, in like a child's life should be.
Right. And his parents clearly were not.
Yeah. And so, you know, I always love that he that he had that, at least, you know. Speaking of like fucked up families, I just noticed that I made a note. I loved the Buckley siblings scenes of Maddie helping Buck unpack his house. It was so. Yeah. I'm just.
Their scenes are always great. Yeah.
That dynamic is one of my absolute maximum favorite dynamics on the show. I talk about on my Tumblr sometimes. I have a very similar sibling dynamic with my own sibling. And so I just always love any scenes with them, and both actors are just so great, and they always bring it, and
they always play off each other really well.
They play off each other really well. And in this scene, it is sort of, it does even play into like the larger thing we've been talking about, where there's like kind of a disconnect where, there is like a quarrelsome energy between
them.
It's
a little like, it's not, they're not fighting, but it is a little contentious, tense.
Yeah. Which, and it is in like a very loving sibling sort of way, where they're just kind of like butting heads a little bit. Like they're like, you know, like, and I really like that energy. One of my other favorite scenes is when he brings the Christmas tree.
And
they start having a fight.
They have this big fight about it.
You know, and the camera follows Chimney out, and you can kind of hear them fighting still. In, you know, and he, you know, he's being like a
child,
an insensitive little brother sort of, and she's like not like. I love that moment. I like it when they fight.
I like it when they fight because it's so rare. Like they almost never do, but
yeah. But they always write it in a way where it just feels very believable. Like it's a very, for these siblings who are very close, and like there's no way they're ever going to actually have a falling out that lasts or anything. Like there's, even when they're fighting, there's like a lot of trust in the relationship.
Yeah.
The stability of the relationship. But yes, I thought the unpacking Buck's house scene was just really great. There was a lot of interesting energy from both of them. And also K for Kitsch.
I love his lack of organizational skills.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of my other notes, is like Buck saying that he thought he would remember what was in every box. I was like, that's the ADHD talking, babe.
That moment when they're talking about when he makes the cookies in the loft at the station, and Ravi's like, oh, did you just go through every spice in your cabinet alphabetically? And it's like, yeah, that's likely move for Buck.
Yes. And I have a note about that scene too. Chimney's comment about being better at not talking about baking is, it is a little meaner than I think he normally is.
Yeah, it's very prickly. Like it doesn't kind of land like their usual kind of banter.
And Buck's reaction is a little bit like,
ow.
Ow. Yeah. Like, you know, like normally he takes Chimney's like knocks on the chin in like a very friendly, brotherly, contentious, camaraderie sort of way.
Yeah. I mean, that's their usual vibe is pretty like, you know, they bat back these insults back and forth pretty easily.
Yes.
And neither of them seems hurt by it.
Yes.
But I think that particular line is so indicative of really of Chim's grief, I think.
Yes.
He's clearly feeling sort of raw and prickly about the whole thing.
Yes.
And it kind of comes out as this comment that's maybe a little meaner than he normally would be.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, and that scene also is like another like circling back on this disconnection between the whole team, because like Buck comes running in talking about these snickerdoodles he's been trying to perfect for, you know,
weeks or whatever, yeah,
a while, and nobody knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I think that's pretty unusual, like, for, you know, with like the green smoothies or whatever, like frequently everybody is like sort of aware,
yeah,
of the thing he's been harping on about, you know, and it's like fond rolling of eyes or, you know, whatever. But like here he's like, come on, you guys, I've been talking about this forever. And they're all like,
if you say blank, so
blank stares, yeah, you know, like everybody's like, you know, it's like crickets. And so it is just like another little weaving in of this
where they're
continuing
not, yeah,
thread.
They're not that, back in this kind of ease and comfort with each other that they have been in past,
yeah,
seasons.
And I think the Buck and Chimney element is also interesting because it's more appropriate when Chimney is not his captain.
Yes. Yeah.
For him to like rag on Buck the way that he likes to do. And I do think it is like, you know, that's just how they like show affection with each other, is this like, you know, just like giving each other shit.
Yep.
But yeah, this one, it feels maybe a little less affectionate, and it also feels a little, maybe you need to pull back on that energy now that you're the captain.
Yeah.
Chimney.
And I think kind of continuing this through the back half of the season with Buck's addiction arc, I think that there's this element of Chim is such an anxious character, and he is so worried about everything. And the,
yes,
one thing he's not worried about is Buck.
Yes.
Buck is fine. And I kind of love that that's a continuing, like, he can rag on Buck. He doesn't have to worry about how Buck's doing. Buck is okay. He's steady. He's secure. He's the one thing that Chim is not anxious about until Buck,
yeah,
comes to him and was like, yeah, I almost stole meds from the rig.
Yes.
And he's just so blindsided and shocked by this.
Yes. That scene, we'll talk about it, I guess, when we get to the,
yeah,
episode. But like that scene is like maybe
so
my favorite scene
so good
they've ever done in the entire series. Like, I love that scene so much. But that is sort of the culmination of what they've set up here at the start of the season and sort of carries,
yeah,
through, like what you're saying. And I do think it's interesting to watch this like stuff with Chimney like through the season, because like at first he thinks like Hen is his rock that he doesn't need to worry about.
Right.
And then that domino kind of falls, that pillar.
Yep.
And he's like, but then it's sort of like, but at least Buck's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, no. But like by that point, he's more stable himself.
Right. And I think with Buck, like, Hen is the person, as she kind of calls out when she's having her whole breakdown, that everybody's sort of relies on to be this pillar of stability. I think Buck isn't like that to Chim in the sense that Chim relies on him emotionally in the same way.
No.
So much as that he's fine. Look at him. He's standing there. He's fine. I don't need to worry about him.
Yeah. And I do think Buck plays sort of a support pillar role for the team.
He's not this mentor character. He's not someone generally that people go to for advice the way they would say Hen, but he's always stable. He's always there. He's always showing up for people. And I think that they kind of do rely on that, even if they don't realize that they rely on that.
Yeah. It's like a more background practical sort of support that he's kind of offering the team. I don't know.
And I think even to the degree of like being a bit of the butt monkey, like
you can
make jokes at his expense and it's fine because he doesn't care and he's not going to be fragile about it, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. He's just this sort of reliable guy that, you know, is like the strong, I don't know, he's the tank.
he's the tank, exactly.
He's the tank, you know, he soaks up damage for the rest of the team. And I don't know, it's just interesting to see the sort of roles each of them plays in the dynamic and just how those are sort of, they're all a little shaky.
Yeah.
Because Bobby died.
Yeah. And they're all so clearly trying to play their normal role.
Yeah.
They're all in the wrong spot and it's not really connecting and they're bouncing off each other and feelings are getting hurt and things that should be friendly banter are turning into fights. And it's just kind of this continual thread through the first half of the season that kind of blows up when Hen gets sick.
Yes.
But I love that they continue it through this episode as well.
Yeah. And I think it's all of that stuff and that like every character like through the season sort of gets like their sort of Bobby grief moment like throughout the season. Honestly, I think because of all of that, season 9 is as a season whole the most cohesive season.
Very cohesive, yeah.
That they've ever done, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a strong narrative thread tying it, the whole thing together, really.
Not that that makes it, like, the best season or whatever, but, like, as a coherent entire season, I do think it is the most cohesive as...
Yeah.
Where you can kind of, like, see it stretched out as sort of, like, a long movie with like many different scenes or whatever. And I thought they did a really, I'm honestly impressed with them like keeping that thread through. That was the one of the things I was most concerned about heading into the season because it can be really difficult to kill off a main character in a long running show and then do that death justice through like continuing through into future episodes, especially in a show like this, where the tone of the show is generally more upbeat.
Yeah. It's not hopeful. Really a dark, depressing show generally.
So it would be a huge shift in the tone of the show if like suddenly, so they really did have their work cut out for them with trying to maintain sort of the more positive, upbeat tone of the show and still integrating these moments of grief throughout the season so that they're not, so that they do justice by killing Bobby.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the way they did it, where, like, we have episodes where, I mean, this one, obviously, in the first handful of episodes, it's very front and center, but then later on, we have episodes where that's not maybe the main plot, but it's still there. They still come back to it. That's still kind of the emotional bedrock of what's happening with all of these characters.
Yes. And it makes sense, too, because, you know, grief is not this steady, constant thing.
Right.
they still all have to show up in their lives and their jobs and, you know, like life
exist in the world.
Time keeps going. Like, and so there's moments where it's sort of taking a back burner and, you know, they're like kind of coming out of the fog of it, character wise and episode plot wise.
Yeah.
And then they'll like dip back into it and like circle it back around. And I think that was a really smart and effective way to handle it, like through the whole season, is like we can kind of just come in and out of it and like revisit it periodically. And I thought it worked. I was frankly astonished at how well I think they pulled it off.
Yeah, no, they did great. And kind of on a similar note, I love the calls in this episode, just in general. But in this episode, the actual calls were great. The escaped pumpkin and
the pumpkin was fantastic.
The little pumpkin icon on Maddie's screen moving through Los Angeles. That was so fun.
Yes, just the visuals of the giant pumpkin rolling around the city were just fantastic. They just, you know, whoever idea that was, like, A plus. You really fun. And the couple leaving for the party and then just letting that guy, I was like, horrible, horrible people. You guys are bad people. You're bad people.
Trying to like fix his costume while he's driving.
You know, she's like, can you even see? And he's like, sure. And it's like, should I drive? Yes, you should drive. You should drive. Anyway, and yeah, like it was, they did a really good job balancing out like the call, or except for the one really dark call.
Yeah. Yes.
They're generally pretty good about like stacking the calls to sort of balance out the vibes of the episode. And this one I would say is like classic 911, where they like really nailed
it. You've got the very lighthearted thing with the pumpkin and then the kind of absurdity of the guy who thinks he's dead and Eddie resurrecting him. And
yeah,
I love Ryan, when they have to act.
King of Faces. Ryan, King of Faces. He does such
The whole back and forth between him and Chim, their terrible acting in universe is always so funny to me.
Yes, I always love watching good actors do bad acting. It's always fun.
It was so funny. Yeah, his faces were great. And the guy who played the not dead man, he was so funny too, just kind of stumbling around yelling at people to leave him alone.
I'm dead, leave me alone. And then they really went like horror movie with it for the Abigail scene, and that also was very effective. They really nailed it. They always have a lot of fun with the Halloween episodes.
This one was so good.
This is no exception. The Abigail stuff, they really went for it with, like, you know, some interesting shots of like them blowing out the candles and, you know, all of that sort of like moody vibes that I think they really landed it there. And I loved when they had like Buck shoo everybody out of the building and then that guy like closes the door
and that Buck like, was the one who found it.
Yeah.
Which I really liked. And I I don't know that it was intentional foreshadowing, but him finding the locked room where she'd been kept in light of Mother's Boy kind of, it's like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, I seriously doubt it was intentional foreshadowing. Right.
But, you know.
But it works.
One can never tell with this show, but yeah.
Yeah. I generally assume there's very little intentional foreshadowing unless it's like three episodes later or something. Like sometimes it's clear the foreshadowing is intentional, but again, it's like how far apart are the episodes is like generally, because if they're like breaking the I don't think they're breaking the episodes that granularly that far out, especially based on what we know of like how up to the wire Tim is rewriting and giving new pages. So
right.
But yeah. I don't know. I thought this was a great episode. I loved it. Ravi.
Ravi. Raggedy Andy. I love him so much.
He looks adorable, first of all. I fully
willing to believe
his statement that costume works on picking up women. I fully am willing to believe
he's
that.
He's so cute.
Yeah. But he was really an MVP in this episode.
Like, he was great.
He was so sweet. Like, I just loved that moment at the end where Buck was like, why
did you go along with this if you knew it was?
Yeah. And he was like, it seemed like you needed a friend. Like,
yep. And then him still kind of roasting Buck with the message.
Oh, totally.
Like, that you're an idiot. Because, yeah. Like, yes, that is what Bobby would say if he was there.
It's absolutely what he would say. I can hear the line delivery perfectly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting the way they sort of, because Eddie rejected Buck in that moment in the middle of the episode, they sort of shuffle in Ravi. He's kind of sitting where typically Eddie would be.
Yeah.
And eye-rollingly going along with one of Buck's, like,
madcap schemes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it just kind of is like cementing this sort of separation between the two of them, between Buck and Eddie.
Yeah. That they're not filling this role in each other's lives that they normally would be.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just think it's interesting. And then we end the episode with them both separate.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they both do resolve their individual plots in this episode, but they don't come back together at any point after the conversation in the locker room.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, they resolve their individual plots, but they don't resolve with each other.
The tension, right. The tension that's between them.
So, like, that's maintained. And it's just such an interesting tension, too, because it's not like they're not fighting.
Yeah, it's not hostile. They're not. There's not like an
overt, objective disconnection between them. It's like this, they're sort of both, I don't know, it's kind of this thing you can't name.
Yeah.
Where I think they are both feeling it, but like nothing technically has happened to where they
right.
can...
They can't just have it out and have a fight because there's nothing really to fight about.
Yeah. And so they're sort of both still kind of playing their roles with each other. But again, not fully because normally it would be Eddie in Buck's house, but it's not. It's Ravi. And I think we said last episode that it does sort of all get come to a head and get resolved in Mother's Boy, I think, is when they finally
kind of get back on the same page with each other, I think.
Yeah. It's sort of all bubbles up in the diner fight.
Yep.
Which again is like they're not really fighting about like
what they're fighting about. Yeah. As with so many of their fights.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really I'm impressed.
Yes.
That's like that's my mantra for season 9, I guess, is like, I don't know, even as we were watching, as things aired, I was generally impressed with what they were giving us the entire time in a way that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
For them having killed off a main and for the fact that this is season nine of a long running network show, like the quality.
They usually start to take a nosedive at that point. This one really didn't. This was actually, I'm going to say, one of the better of the recent seasons.
Yeah. For me, season 9 really feels a lot closer to the early seasons, like 1 through 5.
Yeah.
Than it has felt in a while.
Yeah, definitely.
It does seem like they sort of made a concerted effort to kind of go back and look at what worked from those early seasons and sort of like try to carry some of it forward. The balance of calls felt more like early seasons in most of the episodes. You know, they brought back the voiceover on occasion, like with this episode.
Yeah.
So it does seem like they're doing it on purpose. Like they're like trying to like reconnect to what made the show work early on.
And I think weirdly that killing Bobby was sort of the impetus for that, because it's such a big thing that they kind of had to deal with it, and they had to like look at how all of these relationships function with this big hole in the middle of them.
Yes.
And I think calling back to the earlier seasons and kind of seeing how these characters relate to each other is how they did.
Yeah. And I think on balance, they mostly nailed it.
They mostly nailed it. Yeah. In this episode, they nailed it.
Yeah. It was just so beautiful. It was such a beautiful episode.
Just some really beautiful shots too.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, the exorcism scene with Abigail, that was so good and so creepy and such a great, like, horror movie-esque kind of vibe that I loved. I loved Eddie crossing himself in the middle of it.
Yes.
He's like, oh God.
A demon. She's possessed.
Like, okay, I don't believe in that, except just in case.
And then obviously the Dia de los Muertos stuff was just phenomenally gorgeous.
So good.
Okay. Well, I think I don't have anything else to say.
I think we got it.
So I guess that's a wrap on episode 2.
Episode 2 for episode 5 of 911 season 9. And I don't remember what the name of episode 6 is, but that's what we'll be doing next week.
Yes, that should be next week. Okay, well, thanks for listening, and bye.
We'll see you next week.